Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
What is up, plant people? It's time once more for the Plantthropology Podcast, the show where we dive into the lives, careers, and general coolness of some very cool plant people to figure out what keeps them coming back for more and what makes them tick. I'm Vikram Baliga, your host and your humble guide into this journey through the plant sciences. And as always, my friends, I am so excited to be with you today. I'm going to keep this one short-ish, you know, as short as they ever are. Today, as I record this, is the 9th of March, 2023. And this was going to be an episode about spring garden tips and the beginning of spring and how plants respond to that and blah, 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 all this stuff. And I had it recorded and everything and was ready to go. And I realized as I went to post it that spring starts in 2 weeks and it would make like way more sense for me to post it then because spring, anyway, in the Northern Hemisphere, it doesn't matter. So I decided that I still wanted to put something out and I have had like a criminal amount of coffee today. So much coffee. I woke up early. My wife was heading out of town for work and I was just up. And so I had like all the coffee, probably enough to kill a buffalo. I am not a buffalo, so I got to survive. It was great. Anyway, I decided I would post one of my favorite episodes from the way back when as just a replay. This was from a couple of years ago when I was doing my Plants and World Tradition series. And this is an episode all about caffeine and the ways and beverages and things we've done throughout time and cultures to stay awake. So I thought this would be a fun one to share again. Again, this is one of my favorite episodes that I think I've ever done, at least one of my favorite solo episodes that I've ever done. And I've got some great interviews coming up. I've got one recorded that's coming out next week and a couple other recorded that are going to come out in April and May and going forward. And I've got a list of like 20 people I'm recording with over the next few weeks, which is awesome. And I can't wait for you to hear those. But for now, let's talk about caffeine. Let's talk about everyone's, at least America's, favorite stimulant. Again, I should be careful saying that, but it's my favorite stimulant. So we're going to jump into a replay of Plants and World Traditions, Staying Awake, and then we'll have brand new content coming at you next week. So thanks for hanging out. Thanks for being a part of it. And here we go. All right. Well, let's start off, I think, by talking about caffeine itself. Now, caffeine is everyone's favorite drug. Probably not everyone's favorite drug, but it is a commonly used, socially acceptable drug to consume. And it is. Caffeine is a central nervous system stimulant that wakes you up and keeps you awake. And about, at least in the U.S., about 80% of adults consume some amount of caffeine every single day. Every single day, 80% is a pretty big number. So it is commonly used. It's socially acceptable, but it's a drug, right? So there are ways that caffeine affects your body. And it comes from a lot of sources, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Now, I am not a animal biologist or a human biologist by any means, but basically, there's a few things at play here, which caffeine works on. And this is a very simplified version of how this works, okay? So I'm just going to give you the cliff notes. You can dig into it a little bit more. And if one of you smart human brain biology people wants to correct me on this or come on sometime and talk to me, in fact, even better, about how caffeine works in the brain and the body, I would love to do that. So if you know more than I do about this, which is very likely, give me a call, shoot me a message. Let's chat. Let's do the thing. Okay, so there's a few things at play here. There is something called adenosine, and that's really our big player here. This is the thing that caffeine affects, or the receptor, one of the receptors for adenosine is what caffeine affects so you don't get sleepy. So adenosine is something that binds with receptors in your brain. It's a chemical that binds with receptors in your brain. And as you go through the day, and you do work, adenosine is produced, right? It is part of a biological process that takes you through the day, and then you get sleepy, and it causes you to get sleepy. So it's produced primarily from physical work,
and intense brain use. So over the course of the day, your body begins to accumulate adenosine. Well, there is an A1 receptor in your brain, and when more and more adenosine starts floating around your system, it starts binding with these A1 receptors. As that happens, it's like adenosine's the key that opens this lock. And as that happens, it promotes muscle relaxation. It promotes sleepiness, which is one of the reasons we get tired as the day goes on. It's one of these things that helps us know, okay, we need to rest now. We need to make sure that our body can heal. We need to take the time for our body to recuperate. As we sleep, adenosine is metabolized out of our system. Those A1 receptors unbind, they open back up, and we start to wake up. Adenosine can also bind to this A2A receptor, which interferes in some ways with the release of mood-improving neurotransmitters, like dopamine and other things that wake us up, make us feel happy. One of the major roles of adenosine in our lives is to make sure that we sleep and that we stay asleep, and that our body is not dumping too much dopamine into our system to get us excited and awake and all of those things. Well, this is a good thing, right? We need to be able to sleep. Adenosine is one of our best known and most active sleep regulating molecules. It's important. But enter caffeine, because we probably are not practicing healthy sleep habits. We want to be able to wake up. So if you sleep long enough and you sleep correctly, and you know, you wake up at the right point in your sleep cycle, and you know, your phone is not yelling at you at 6 a.m. to get up before you're really done, sometimes there is adenosine still floating around in your system that hasn't really been metabolized. So when you wake up, you're kind of groggy, some of those receptors are still bound, and you're really just not getting that endorphin dump that gets you excited, gets you awake, and gets your body really waking up and working. So caffeine is a thing that we've found that works in this system. Now, it doesn't really do anything specifically, or as far as I understand, it doesn't really do anything when it binds to these A1 and A2A receptors. But what it does do is get in the way of adenosine. So it's not unlocking the key, or it's not opening this lock. Think of it as like you're trying to get in and open your front door and, you know, find all the dopamine and all this stuff, and someone's stuck a key in the lock already and you can't get it out for a while. And so you can't get in your house. You can't open that door. That's kind of what caffeine molecules do. They're not active necessarily, again, as far as I understand it, at these A1 receptors, but they keep adenosine from binding to A1 receptors. Okay. And that's what wakes you up. It gives you a jolt of wakefulness because your brain thinks, oh, these receptors are open. Since the caffeine's not really acting on them, it starts to dump dopamine. You get happy, you feel good, you wake up, and all of those things. But over time, that caffeine also metabolizes out of your system. It takes probably about 15 minutes for you to really feel the effects of caffeine. And then it can last up to 6 hours in your system with generally your peak binding or whatever, the peak activity, about 2 to 3 hours after you drink caffeine. But over time, your caffeine starts to metabolize out of your system. The adenosine that is still present starts hitting those A1 and A2A binding sites. You get tired, you get sleepy, sometimes your mood depresses, and you don't like feel as awake and as alert as possible. And sometimes in some people, that come down is pretty hard. That crash is pretty hard, where you go from like all those receptors being bound up to them, or being open essentially, to being bound up in like a really short amount of time. And so that wave of sleepiness, or the wave of some, in some cases it feels like, you know, sadness, hits you pretty fast. And so you reach for another cup of coffee or whatever. Well, that's again a basic way of how it works. But you can see some of the issues, right? If you say drink a cup of coffee 2 hours before bed, there is a good chance, unless you've developed a tolerance to caffeine, that it's going to start plugging up the spaces where all those adenosine receptors need to be active, right? Where all that adenosine needs to bind with these A1 and A2A receptors. That can be a problem if you want to go to sleep, which, you know, at some point we generally do want to go to sleep. Now, I have a pretty high tolerance for caffeine because I drink a lot of caffeine. And I always say that I can drink a cup of coffee and go straight to bed. And that's really pretty true, but I don't sleep super restfully those nights because even though I'm asleep, even though like my body goes to sleep, my brain is still fairly active because it's still releasing dopamine. All these things are happening. And so, even though I sleep, I don't necessarily sleep well. So a lot of people recommend you have a cup of caffeine or you have your caffeine mostly in the morning or early afternoon, or really limit the amount you consume after lunchtime. As I record this, drinking a cup of coffee, and it's like 4 p.m. But really, you want it mostly metabolized out of your system before you try to go to bed. That is, again, an overview of how caffeine works. Now, the question that comes up a lot is it safe? Can you drink caffeine? Yes, mostly. Yes and no. It is an addictive substance. You can develop a chemical dependency to caffeine. Now, we could split hairs maybe about dependency versus addiction and all of those things. But the fact is, it can do things like increase your heart rate, increase your blood pressure, mess with your blood sugar levels, sometimes mess with your stomach acids, and it can, you know, induce dizziness, hypoglycemia, weird breath smells, and a few other things. So caffeine in large doses can have some negative effects on people. Generally, it's considered that 400 milligrams of caffeine per day is pretty safe for an adult. That is 4 to 5 8-ounce cups of coffee. So, you know, a regularly brewed cup of coffee that you brew like in your drip coffee maker or whatever, probably contains somewhere between 80 and 160 milligrams of caffeine. So if you like to brew your coffee really strong, if you use a type of roast that has a lot more caffeine in it, you're probably going to get a little bit more than that, right? But generally, about 4 cups of coffee is pretty safe. Now, a cup is a literal cup, 8 ounces. So 32 to 40 ounces of coffee will get you in that 400 milligram per day range. And it's considered to be really fairly safe. However, if you go over that, if you are more sensitive to it, there can be some issues. It can cause you a few problems. Again, mostly nervous system problems, sometimes issues sleeping, issues with anxiety and things like that. Another side of it is because you can become chemically dependent to caffeine, there are legitimate withdrawal symptoms if you stop caffeine. I've experienced this. I was sick one time. I had a food poisoning or something. I ate a Taco Bell, actually, and got food poisoning. So do with that what you will. But that weekend that I was sick, I was like, oh, my stomach's already upset. I probably don't want to drink a cup of coffee. It can be a diuretic, and it can, you know, have some other effects on your stomach. Well, I started getting sick Friday. Monday rolls around and I'm still not feeling better. I had to take time off of work. I realize that I'm starting to get dizzy. I'm having trouble focusing. I've got the sweats. I've got the shakes. I'm running a low fever. My body's clammy and cold. I'm irritable and all of these things. And I was like, oh man, do I have the flu? Am I sick? And I started to think about it. I was getting a migraine. I had headaches. My body hurt. I was like, oh no, I haven't had caffeine in like 4 days. And I was in a full-blown chemical withdrawal from caffeine. So I got up and I took an Excedrin migraine, which is pretty much like, you know, a pain reliever with caffeine in it. And like 20 minutes later, I was fine. Totally felt fine. And so you can develop a real dependency to this, and you can actually like hit some serious withdrawal symptoms. If you're trying to quit caffeine, it's probably best to step it down. Cold turkey sucks, I can tell you that. But it is possible, right, where you reduce your amount of caffeine consumption, and over the course of, you know, a couple of weeks, you can really reduce your dependency on it. So that is an overview of how caffeine works in your system. It's very simple for sure, but it's interesting. So if you're interested in learning more, go read about it a little bit. But I'm going to take a break real quick. I'm going to tell you some stuff, and then we will be back and talk about some of the sources of caffeine worldwide and talk about a little bit of the history of it, not necessarily too much, but we will get into some of the different ways you can have caffeine.
Well, hey there. Welcome to the Midroll. I'm so glad to see you here today, and I'm glad that you're listening to this episode again. Again, I really like it. I think it was really fun. Follow Planthropology all the places on the social medias. I am on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as Planthropology or some variation thereof. You can also follow me on TikTok as at the Plant Prof. I want to thank the Texas Tech Department of Plant and Soil Science for all the support and for making this show possible. And I want to thank you, the listener, for being such a wonderful supporter and friend of the show. If you would like to support the show further, you can make a monetary donation at buymeacoffee.com/planthropology. And for the price of a coffee, you can buy me a coffee. This episode is all about caffeine. After all, you can also leave a rating or review on Podchaser or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening. And again, I love gifts. And if you want to get me something, that would mean the world. And I wear a size 5-star review. Another cool thing coming up, I am new to tabletop role-playing games, but I am going to be part of an upcoming campaign called The Wild Sea for a podcast called Nature Check. And that's going to start up in April, maybe actually this month, March of 2023. I've got great characters, really fun people I'm recording with. I have no idea what I'm doing, but it's going to be all the fun. So much fun. None of our characters in on our crew have bones or eyes, and it's going to be awesome. I'm a big cactus. So go follow the Nature Check podcast. It's really fun. And again, I'm learning as I go, and I'm just so happy to be included. But I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. I hope you go follow Nature Check, and I hope that you are staying adequately caffeinated. I love you, my friends. We'll talk soon at the end of the episode.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the sources of caffeine from around the world and throughout time. And there's a lot of them, right? There's about 60 plants overall that we know of that contain caffeine in some form. Some of them are safer than others, and some of them are certainly more palatable than others. But there's a few that are used commonly. Now, as a lot of the things we're going to talk about in this series, this is not an extensive list. The world is a big place. And there's a lot of cultures and a lot of ways that some of these products are used around the world that you know, we can't necessarily practically go into in depth in every episode. But this is maybe a starting point for some of your own research and some other things that may get you interested in some of these topics. So I think when people think about caffeine consumption today, we think about coffee. Coffee is certainly the most popular source of caffeine today, right? Everyone, at least in the U.S., drinks coffee. Now, tea consumption, which we'll talk about in a second, is more popular in different parts of the world. But here in the U.S., we drink lots and lots and lots and lots of coffee. Lots of coffee. Again, about 80% of people have some kind of caffeine during the day. And a lot of those people get that through a cup of coffee, whether it be espresso or a latte drink or something like that. Coffee was probably first produced as a drink in Ethiopia, and it's still wild there. So that's one of our main sources of coffee. I really like a good Ethiopian coffee. I think it's the flavor is great. I think the way it balances when it brews is great. I'm a fan of Ethiopian coffee. It's not everyone's favorite, but I really like it. In about the 4th century AD, some of this consumption started to spread east from Ethiopia. And which is interesting, right? So that was the birthplace. It moved into Europe, it moved into Asia, and then eventually it made it over to the Americas. And now coffee's grown all over the world. South America grows a lot of coffee. We don't get a lot of coffee production in North America, maybe some in Central America, but South America, Africa, huge. You know, I will say Hawaii grows some great Kona coffee. They do grow it there. It needs high elevations in general, a fairly cool, wet climate, and well-drained kind of mountainous soil. So you see them grown a lot on the sides of hills or on the sides of mountains. You rarely see a coffee plantation just out on the flat plains in the universe. And so generally, probably only about 5% of Ethiopia's coffee, or, you know, the world's coffee for sure is less than this, but only about 5% is probably wild coffee. Most of it is Arabica coffee that we have bred and selected for and now grow all over the world, and it's shipped worldwide. Fair trade coffee is a big thing. Make sure that as you buy it, if possible, you know, that the farmers who grew it are treated well. Because in some of these countries, they're paid barely anything for their product. And then you end up at Green Mermaid beverage restaurant place, and you pay $37 for a latte when the farmer that actually produced it may have gotten fractions of cents for that same cup of coffee. Probably another major source of caffeine worldwide is tea. There's a lot of tea consumed. Probably started in Asia. We don't really necessarily know when it was first used, or at least I don't necessarily know when it was first used and domesticated, but there's legends that there was a Chinese emperor that was boiling water in his garden, and a tea leaf fell off of his plant into a pot. And he tried it, enjoyed its flavor, found that it was stimulating, and it woke him up, and he felt good and refreshed after that. And then it started to be grown and used widely. Tea is drank all over the world. India, China, Japan, Asia drinks a lot of tea. From there, it spread into Europe through probably the English occupation of India, as well as trade with the Far East. And then tea is not as big of a drink in the United States, but we drink a lot of tea. There's a lot of different varieties of it, different forms of it. But it's a good beverage. It does not have the caffeine content of coffee, so people don't probably drink quite as much of it, or maybe they drink more of it to keep them awake. I don't know exactly how that sort of shakes out. But black tea, some varieties of tea, especially like black tea, can have about as much caffeine as a cup of coffee per ounce. And so, yeah, there's a lot of good teas out there. I find that teas tend to be fairly soothing. We talked earlier about how there's two basic ways that caffeine affects the brain. There's the A1 receptor that wakes you up, or blocking the A1 receptor wakes you up, but blocking the A2A receptor, keeping adenosine out of that, can make you happier without really making you, you know, more awake, because you get a little bit of a dopamine dump from some of these less caffeinated forms of caffeine, or these less caffeinated foods and beverages. Another one that we find is the cola nut. The cola nut. So if you look at natural ingredients on a can of soda, some of that flavoring may have come from the cola nut. It's grown in Africa, Central and South America. Sometimes you'll see it called the guru nut or something like that. And it's traditionally used in foods and beverages, and is served to guests a lot of times in different cultural and social ceremonies. A lot of times it's also used in traditional medicines and things like that. It's about the size of a chestnut. You can get different, you can get the whole nuts, you can get them in extracts. They're actually kind of cool. They're sort of a, They look sort of like a cross between a walnut and a pistachio. They are sort of greenish red in different parts of the seed. And it's said to have some pretty good health effects. It can help with, in some cases, it's said to help with digestion, with depression, some things like that. And it's a good product, and it's used as flavoring quite a bit, and or it's consumed whole. It's not especially caffeinated, right? Like, there is caffeine in it, but it's not nearly as much as like a cup of coffee. Another one that's very popular is cocoa. So what comes from cocoa? Chocolate comes from cocoa. It is native in the wild to South America, and it's also called sometimes Theobroma, which in Latin means the food of the gods. There are legends that Montezuma, the king of Mexico, would drink as much as 50 cups of cocoa per day. Now, whether that's true or not, no one really knows. Who knows? I don't know. But it's been traced back a long way. We can probably find cocoa in human consumption as far back as about 200 BCE, maybe even a little bit farther. And the first hot cocoa drinks were probably made from sort of a mash of cocoa seeds that was bred or that was brewed that way. Today, a lot of our cocoa in the world is grown in Africa along the Ivory Coast and in Ghana, and they are probably the primary exporters of cocoa today. It does have a fair amount of caffeine in it. Now, again, it is not nearly on the scale of coffee or something like that, but per ounce or per 30 grams, which is about an ounce, you may see from a dark chocolate bar about 20 grams of caffeine, which is not, I mean, it's about a third probably or less of the amount that you might get out of like a shot of espresso or something. But that's actually not bad, right? Milk chocolate has very little caffeine in it. And dark chocolate is by far the highest concentration of caffeine. Again, it's not so much that it's probably going to wake you up and make you super alert, but it will mess with those A2A receptors, and it can make you happy. Chocolate makes you happy, right? Chocolate makes me happy. I think we should be, having more chocolate in our lives. Anyway, yeah, I guess it depends on if you're trying to lose weight or not, or if you like chocolate. Not everyone likes chocolate. I think it's a little weird, but whatever. That's fine. There's also some other types of teas. There is a South American tea. And some of you have probably heard of this. This has become kind of popular over the past few years for some reason. It was kind of a buzzword for a while, but it comes from a South American holly, and it's called yerba mate. Yerba mate. It's a South American holly tree, Ilex paraguensis. Paraguayensis, Ilex paraguayensis. So this is probably grown in Paraguay, different parts of South America. It is high in caffeine. One cup has about 80 milligrams of caffeine, which is a little bit lower than maybe black coffee, but it's pretty close. Has lots of antioxidants in it. It's probably in some studies suggested that it may be higher in antioxidants even than green tea. Also has lots of vitamins and minerals in it. I've actually never had yerba mate, but apparently it is quite an acquired taste. I've seen it described as bitter and smoky. It's prepared sometimes in a gourd and consumed through a metal straw, and you add water as you drink it. I think that's interesting. I would be, willing to try that someday. I think that's kind of cool. But again, it's apparently a acquired taste. You have to be kind of careful with it too. There are some alkaloids in it, and caffeine itself is an alkaloid. But there are some studies that have found that if you drink like 2 liters a day, which that's a lot, by the way. But if you're drinking like 2 liters of yerba mate a day, there is some evidence to suggest that it may be a carcinogen, right? So it can be cancer causing. Now, I don't know that the Research on that is super strong. I'm not really sure, but definitely anything in huge quantities, including just coffee and caffeine, can definitely be kind of hard on you. Can be kind of hard on you. Another one is matcha tea, and you've probably seen this. It has not quite as much caffeine, about 30 milligrams per cup. Which is about a third of the dose, or a little bit more than a third of a dose. But it's been shown to maybe help with, detoxification, which that's kind of a buzzword for me, because detoxification is the reason we have, kidneys and the liver, and that's their job. So don't drink matcha tea to like detoxify your body. Just have a liver. Have a liver. Have two. No, don't have two. Have two kidneys, have one liver. That's how it's supposed to be. One nice thing about matcha tea, and something that one reason people drink it, is it can be consumed pretty safely at night because, again, it is fairly low in caffeine. It unlocks some of those happy feelings in your brain, but it doesn't keep you awake or keep you super stimulated. So you can drink matcha and go to bed just the same as like a lot of teas or a lot of cocoa drinks. So one last one that I want to talk about that's pretty interesting and it kind of hits close to home for me is Yaupon tea. Yaupon tea. So Yaupon tea comes, as you might have guessed, if you know about some Texas plants, from the Yaupon holly. So that is a native Texas plant. And it grows quite well in a lot of the state. I've talked about this before. It's called Ilex vomitoria. So it's true holly. It is a evergreen holly, has little tiny leaves and bright red berries in the winter. So right now, ours in the garden looks beautiful. It's called Ilex vomitoria for a reason. The berries are pretty toxic. Now, they're not like so toxic they're going to kill you or something. But as the name suggests, they will make you pretty sick if you consume any amount or any large amount of them. Birds eat them. They're great winter forage for birds, but they have a different type of metabolism than you non-bird organism, and they can process out some of the alkaloids and different things in those berries. However, the leaves from the Yaupon holly have been called the North American yerba mate, have been called in some cases the North American yerba mate. So again, they're in the same genus as the Ilex paraguriensis. I'm sure I said that wrong. But it has about the same caffeine content in the leaves, but probably a milder flavor than the yerba mate. So as the cowboys were working out in Texas and across some of these ranges, Yaupon holly was actually fairly ubiquitous. It was easy to find. And coffee was expensive for a long time. Now, you may say coffee is expensive today, and yes, it is. But it is not nearly as hard to get as it once was, right? Coffee was a delicacy for a lot of our history, for a lot of the history of the consumption of the plant. It was very expensive and very hard to get. So it was discovered that the leaves of the Yaupon holly, or it was discovered, they probably learned from oral traditions from the native peoples of this area who used that plant for thousands of years before the cowboys wandered their way through here, right? It was discovered. That is some great historical, cultural, deep knowledge of the peoples of this area that was passed on and was actually pretty useful for folks in modern times. So it's brewed the same way. You make sort of a tea out of it. It doesn't taste like coffee, but it has actually a nice flavor. This one I have had. It has, less caffeine than coffee, but it is fairly caffeinated, right? It's maybe about 80%, maybe a little bit less than coffee. But I think it's pretty interesting. So a lot of people, if they brew Yaupon tea, will add berries, not the Yaupon berries. No, don't do it. Bad. But berries from different plants to add some flavor to it and make it maybe a little more pleasant to drink, even though it probably is a little sweeter and a little bit more palatable than yerba mate to begin with. Well, that's my last one. Okay, I like Yaupon hollies. I think they're pretty plants, and I think that's a good note to end on. This is not an extensive list, and if you're interested in this topic, hit me up. Let's talk about it. I would love to interview you on the show if you know more about different sources of caffeine and you'd be happy to talk, or you would like to talk about it. Hit me up. Let's chat. Let's get you on an episode.
Aside from that, I'm just so happy that you listen and that you're still a part of Planthropology after all this time and after all my goofiness over the past few months. Stay tuned. I've got a great episode coming up next week with my friend Elizabeth Kelly, who has sang with Taylor Swift and does roller derby and manages a greenhouse and knows everything about parasitic plants, is just a delightful human being, one of my very favorite people. So stay tuned for that. We've got an episode on the history of plant breeding coming up. We've got an episode on things to do in your garden for the spring, and then so much more going forward. I love you folks. Thanks for being a part of Planthropology once again. Keep being kind to one another. If you have not been kind to one another, maybe give that a try, and keep being really cool plant people. Y'all are the best, and I will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, @official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.